And we're holding on Yud Zayin Omid Beis, 12 lines from the bottom. We talked about yesterday the fact that we said, what are the various cases in which an Eved will, or an Eved Ivriya, or Omer Ivriya will or won't work, continue to work after the master who originally bought them dies. So we said an Omer Ivriya never, an Eved Ivriya only if he's not nirtza, where he didn't have his ear pierced, and he wasn't sold to a goy. So if he was sold to a goy, or if he's sold to a yid and was nirtza, then he goes free when his master dies. And if it's an omer ivriya, then also she goes free when her master dies. Otherwise, an eved ivriya who was not nirtza and was not sold to a goy would work for only if the master left over a son, but not if he left over a daughter or any other kind of heir. So in this connection, we talked about then that if he was sold to a goy, then he wouldn't work for the goy's heirs. Instead, he would go free. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about the matter of a goy's heirs b'chlal. So the Gemara says, "Amar Rav, Dvar Torah Ovid Kachavim Yerushas Aviv. Mina Torah a goy will yarshin from his father who is also a goy." Which would mean, therefore, in other words, that you're not allowed to interfere and to try to take it for yourself. Don't think, for example, that when the goy dies, his property is free for the taking, according to Torah. No, it would actually be osur because he has heirs. Shenema, v'chishavim kenehu v'leim yoshe kenehu. We quoted earlier in the Gemara, an expression of the pasuk that the Eved Ivri, when he wants to buy his freedom, he's going to be megareya pidyona, he's going to pay for the remaining years from now until Yovel. It says he figures out with the one who buys him, and we said v'loyim yoshe kenehu. We said the implication of the pasuk is that he doesn't have to figure out with the heirs of the one who bought him, because as soon as the one who bought him dies, then he goes free. Mikloud isla yoshim. Well, that itself implies that the goy has heirs. Otherwise, there's no yoshe kenehu to be excluded in the first place. Then Rava continues. Ger es ha'ovik kachavim ein medivrei Torah el medivrei sofer. Now, what about for a ger? Suppose that a goy becomes a ger. So the fact that he yarshins from his father who remained a goy, that would not be minat Torah. That's only midrabban. So had he stayed a goy, then he would be yarshining him on a deraisa level. Now that he's not, then it's only on the drabbanon level, which we see that it's not, as we learn in a mission. Ger ovid kachavim shi yoshua saviyam ovid kachavim. Suppose that two brothers, one's a ger and the other one remained a goy, and the two of them are yarshining from their father. Ger yochel loyim ovid kachavim. So then the brother who's a ger is allowed to tell the one who's a goy, toilata avodis kachavim vani mois. You have, for example, among their father's possessions, which they're dividing up, their father had avodizaras. And some of them may have a certain monetary value to them. They may not have gold or silver or what have you. So the ger, now of course the ger can't use of a desire, it would be also b'hanah for him, but he could tell his brother, who remained a goy, you take the Avodizara, and I will take an equivalent amount of money. So we'll figure out this statue that our father had is worth $1,000, so you keep that, and I'll take an extra $1,000 from a different part of the estate to compensate for that. Or, for example, he can tell him, Tolata Yayin Nesach Vani Peres. He can tell him, our father left wine, which for me is Yayin Nesach, and I can't do anything with it. You have no problem with that. So you could take the Yayin Nesach, and I'll take a compensating amount of Peres. Mishabolu Shus Ger Osir. Now, he would not be allowed to do that once it came into the possession of the Ger, meaning because then already it would belong to him, and now it would be Osir Bahana. So if he had already divided up the property. If they had already divided up the property, and he winds up with, in his part, is of a Zara or Yayin Nesach, then he wouldn't be able to make such a deal. But before they divided it up, before it actually came into his possession, then he's allowed to make such a deal with his brother. Now, continues Rava, the Isakadaitach Daraisa, if you're going to think the whole concept that this ger is inheriting from his father is also Daraisa, then what's the difference? Kilo Bolo Shusenami. So the same thing, why should it be any different? Even before it came into his possession. The fact is, isn't he taking something that's a trade for Avodah Zarah? And Tosfos points out that it can't be because of Breira, it can't be that it'll turn out retroactively that was his portion, because then in fact it would be Mutter, even if it was Bala Rishosai, because even if it did come into his Rishos, we could say the same thing, he trades afterwards with his brother, and we would say Breira. In the end, of course, we say, as the Gemara mentions in various other places in Shas, we don't say Breira with things Daraisa, and the Issur of Avodah Zarah and the Issur of Yain Nesach are Daraisa. The point is, though, that even if we held Yesh Breira in Daraisa, then obviously the Tana of this Mishnah holds that we don't, because otherwise he would have said the same thing could apply. Even after it came into his possession, he'd be allowed to trade it, and we'd say retroactively that it was considered that wasn't part of his share. The fact that we don't say that, the fact that we make that distinction, must be that it's only Dirabanan. So Ela Midirabanan. So therefore, obviously, it must be only Dirabanan that he inherits from his father in the first place. And therefore, in other words, what we're saying is, to begin with, when the Chachamim made the Takana, that he yarshins his father, for reasons that we're going to explain in a second, they specifically made it that it doesn't include things that are also b'hana. So only if it actually comes into his possession, then the Chachamim have no power to do anything with that. The fact is, it came into his possession, he voluntarily took it, so then that's his problem. But before he took it, the Chachamim can say, to begin with, or Takana, that he yarshins from his father, is not meant to include those things in the first place. Therefore, he can say to his brother, look, they're not yet mine. The Chachamim who made the Takana that I can yarshin from our father did not include these things. So they're not mine yet. They're still part of the undivided estate. So you take them, and I'll take something else instead. Now, why did they make that Takana? The Chachamim made a Gzeira, because otherwise the ger may return to his bad ways. If he sees that because he became a ger, he forfeits the Yerusha from his father, then we're afraid that that might motivate him to say, you know what, why did I bother becoming a ger? I may as well revert to being a goy. In fact, Tosfos says, the fact is, Gershon is a guy who cotton to Nerladomi. The fact is, he won't be able to undo the fact that he's a Yid. If he does, he won't be considered a Goy. He'll be considered a Yisroel Mummer, but he may not know that. He may think that in fact he becomes a Goy and he gets a Yerusha from his father. He thinks if I go back to being a goy, okay, he knows that in that case he won't really be, he'll be a Yisroel Mummer. He thinks then I'll be able to yarshin him, so he may think that mistakenly. So therefore, the Chachamim made him a takana that he should be able to inherit from his father. And the Gemara continues, Tani Nami Chochi, we learn similarly in a Braisa, Bamed Gorim Amurim Pshid Yoshu, when is all this talking about that the Ger can tell his brother, the Goy, we have things over here that are also to me, but are fine for you, so I won't take them, and you take them instead, and I'll take something else. That would only be when they Yarshin. Avokshin Shtakfu also. But if they made a partnership, then it would be also. So for example, if they had a partnership, if they owned things in partnership and then one of them became a ger, then you don't have that kind of dispensation. Because after all, then he is having a benefit from Yisurei Hana. So you see, the only reason is, so why would you make that distinction? Because the whole concept that he gets anything from his father in the first place is only Dirabanan, so therefore, the Chachamim can make a distinction before it came into his Rishus versus afterwards. And the reason is, again, Shemi Yachso the Surah, because otherwise he may think that if he reverts to being a Goy, he'll be better off. But that doesn't apply in the case of a partnership. Okay. Continues Rava. What about the other way around? Suppose the father became a Ger and the son remained a Goy. The Geras Ager, or what happens if both of them became Gerim, and we know that even if they both of them become Gerim, still each of them is Katnishanola Dami. Each one is considered only like a newborn baby, and they're not considered to have any relationship to one another in Halacha. So Rava continues, that kind of, in those cases, then there's no Yerusha, not Minat Torah, and not Midrabanan either. The Tanan, as in fact we learn in a Mishnah, or on the side of here, it says maybe it should be the Tanya, Braisa, Lava Mois Minagershin is Gairu Bonavim, right? Suppose that a regular Yid borrowed money from a guy whose children became Gairim with him. So now the one he borrowed money from has children, but he really doesn't because they're not considered as children of Halacha. Lo Yaksu Levanav, then if the father dies, he doesn't have to return it to the sons, the im hechzer, and in fact, if he does return it to them, ein ruach chachamim, noichahimenu, the chachamim do not approve of that. Noichahimenu, Rashi says, means, ein machzikin loitova, the chachamim don't say, you know what, you did a good thing, because he's not necessary to do that. Sometimes we have, earlier, there are other Mishnayos over there that in Masechta Shavuos that talk about things where even though you're not required to do them, if you do them, ruach chachamim noichahimenu, for example, it talks about in the Mishnah over there that technically you don't have to pay back a loan after Shemitah, if there was no prusable, but if you do, Ruach Chachamim Neuchahimenu, the Chachamim appreciate it, you did something correct. But here, the Chachamim never set up such a takana in the first place, and therefore, like, you're not really doing any, but you're not really doing any Chachamim any favors. Because, in other words, because again, they're not considered to Yarushin from him. There's a story, in fact, the Gemara tells us in Bava Basra, a story along those lines. They're actually, you have something along those lines where there was a guy who had become a ger by the name of Isur. He had a son named Rav Mori, who, Rav Mori had been conceived when his father was still a guy. By the time he was born, his father had been a skyer, whatever. The point is, he's not considered related to his father in Halacha, and you have a whole story over there where Rav owed Isur a certain amount of money, and he has to arrange ways that he shouldn't end up repaying it to Rav Mori, based on this Mishnah or this Braisa over here, because Rav Mori is not considered related to Isur in Halacha, even though, of course, he's biologically related to him. So therefore, so Rava says that you see, therefore, that the fact that a ger should yarshin from his father a ger, or for that matter, that a goy should yarshin from his father a ger, there's no such thing. So the Gemara asks Vatanya, but we learn in a different Braisa, or again, Agoy Sabbat says, here it should be Vatnan, it's a Mishnah. Anyway. Ruach Chachamim Noichahimenu. We have another Mishnah of Braisa that says that the Chachamim do approve of it when he returns the money to the Ger's sons. And the answer is, like Kasha, there's no contradiction. The first Mishnah of Braisa that says, Ein Ruach Chachamim Noichahimenu is talking about where the child was conceived and born not Bekdusha. So he was born and his father was still a goy. So in that case, then ein ruach chacham neichemenu, you're not required at all to return it. The second Mishnah is talking about by the time he was born, his father had already been misgayer. Now there, it's much more likely people are going to think that he's like a regular yid. They're not going to necessarily realize that he was conceived when his father was still a goy. So that kind also, technically, you're not required to return him the loan because, again, he's not considered related to his father, la'alofa. But l'fnim v'shuras hadin, it would be good to return it to him because then otherwise people are going to think that he's a regular son of his father, and why aren't you returning the loan to him? So Tosfos asks from that story in Bava Basra, because in that case with Isur and Rav Mori was exactly that kind of thing. Where Rav Mori was born, by the time he was born, his father was already a ger, and he was saying that ruach chachamim neichahimenu, that it would be good for the chachamim, that it would be the chachamim would appreciate if he returns it to the son. So Tosfos makes a distinction. Here we're talking about a loan. After all, the guy originally did you a favor by lending you money. Over there, though, on the contrary, it wasn't a loan; it was pikadon. In fact, Rava had gone to all the trouble of watching it all this time, so therefore that's different. That's Tosfos brings, Rabbi Natan makes that distinction. Then Tosfos continues, the Ri doesn't hold of that distinction. Rather, Tosfos says, no, the other way around, actually. The distinction that our Gemara is making is actually the other way around. If he was born Shaloi B'Kedusha, then it is a good thing to return the loan or the Pekodin to him, and Ruach HaChamim Noichai Menu, because then it's obvious that you're doing it as a voluntary thing. But when Hirosi Shaloi B'Kedusha, V'Ledosi B'Kedusha, if he's in the situation like Ramari, where he was born after his father, where before he was born, his father had already become a ger, then you have the opposite problem. The problem is, people are going to think that he's a full-fledged Yid, which is, for example, that's going to have implications as far as the halachas of Yibum. So on the contrary, then, when he was born B'Kedusha, then that would be the case. The Ri says, when the Chachamim would disapprove of you returning the loan or Pekodin to him, because then you're going to make people think that he is fully related to his father or to his brother or whatever, and that has implications as far as the halachas of Yibum, and you don't want to do that. And that would be the case with Ramari, and that would be why Rabba didn't want to return the Pekodin to him. So, the Gemara continues, Rav Chiya Bar Oven, Omar, Rav Yochanan, Ovid Kachavim, Yodishis Ovid, Dvar Torah. So now, Rava had started the discussion by saying that a goy yaushins from his father, Min HaTorah, as opposed to, we said, a ger yaushins his father, only Midrabanan, and so forth. So now, Rav Chiya Bar Oven is also saying, in the name of Rav Yochanan, we'll bring a proof that a goy yaushins his father, Min HaTorah. We find the pasuk that Hashem says, don't try to fight against the people of Edom and take over their land, because I've given the mountain of Seir to Esav as an inheritance. So that means, in other words, so we see from that a goy yaushins from his father Min HaTorah. In other words, the idea is that that Esav yaushined it from Yitzchak and from Avraham. So the Gemara asks, "Do we throw mumer shiny? Why? How is that a solid proof? Esav was Yisrael Mumer. Now, okay, he lived before Mount Torah. There's not really the short difference between a Yid and a Goy that there is from before. But the point is that still Avraham Avinu was already considered the beginning of Jews, and therefore Esav, who was born from Yitzchak and Rivka, is in that category as well, except that he voluntarily gave it up and became the Rosh Esav that he was. So you could say, but he's still considered a Yid to a certain extent. So maybe that's why he yaushins. Who says that would apply to a full-fledged Goy? So Ela Mehocha. And there's a couple of different ways of explaining actually what the Gemara is, the flow of the Gemara. One is that we're talking about, we just said that it means that Esav yaushins from Avraham and Yitzchak, and the question is maybe it's different because he's Yisro Mumer, and then there's a different explanation that Rosh gives, the point that the Gemara starts with the assumption that it means that Esav was able to bequeath Hauseir to his children. But the Gemara says that no, Esav is like Yisro Mumer, so therefore, yes, he's able to inherit and to bequeath to his children, not necessarily a full-fledged goy. So Ela Mehocha, rather we can learn from a few psukim later, Ki Livnei Loit, Nasatis O Yerusha, where Hashem says, don't try to conquer the lands of Moav or Ammon, because I've given them to Loit as an inheritance. Now, to the children of Loit as an inheritance, also from Avraham Avinu. Meaning, in other words, to begin with, Hashem had promised Avraham Avinu 10 lands, the lands of the 7 nations of Canaan, plus Keni, Knezi, and Kadmoni. And among the various opinions, what Keni, Knezi, and Kadmoni are that they were the lands of Ammon, Moav, and of Ammon, Moav, and Seir. Anyway, the point is, Loit, there's no question, remained, is not considered part of the bris of Avraham Avinu. He wasn't there when Avraham even had his bris. He's not a biological descendant of Avraham, and he wasn't there when Avraham had his bris. So therefore, if we see that the pasuk is saying that nevertheless he inherited these lands and he bequeathed them to his children, then it means that Yerusha applies to a goy as well. So we have, the bottom line is, we have Rava and Rav Chiya Bar Oven both saying the same din, but learning it from different places. Rava is deriving it from the fact that it says, V'chishav in Kenehu, that the Eben Ivri figures out and calculates the amount that he has to pay with the one who bought him, which the implication is, V'loyim Yoshe Kenehu. He doesn't have to make that calculation with his with his bio's Yoshim, because even though his bio has Yoshim, we said he goes free when the bio dies. And Rav Chiya Ba'Oven is learning it from Bnei Loi. So, but Rav Chiya Ba'Oven, my time like Omaka Rava. So why doesn't Rav Chiya Ba'Oven agree with Rava and learn it from the case of the Eved Ivri? And the answer is, Miksiv Chisham Keneu V'Loyim Yoshim Keneu. The fact is, does it say any place in the Pasuk this implication that you calculate with Kenehu and not Yoshe Keneu? No, it doesn't say any such thing in the Pasuk. Yeah, it says V'Chisham Keneu. You want to deduce from it V'Loyim Yoshe Keneu, but the fact is it doesn't say in the fact is it doesn't say in the Pasuk. So you can't really learn from that. And different Mephoshim talk about, I mean, the fact is he does agree with the din that an Eved Ivri whose Goyish master dies goes free. He's not disagreeing with that. So how would he learn the Pasuk then? But, there's a couple of possibilities that Achronim talk about how Rav Chiya Ba'Oven would explain it. But in any case, he says you don't necessarily see explicitly from that Pasuk that a Goy Yarshin's his father. The Rava, my time, like Amuk Rav Chiya Ba'Oven, and vice versa. Why doesn't Rava want to learn from Rav Chiya Ba'Oven's Pasuk? He says, Mishum Kvoda da Avraham Shaini. It's different because of the covered of Avraham than Hashem would say. In other words, Hashem wanted to grant Avraham these lands, and therefore, so Hashem makes it considered that even those who are associated with him, Loit and Esav, respectively, can inherit these lands from him, but not necessarily that we would say on a regular basis that a goy could yarshin from a, that a goy could yarshin from a, that a goy could yarshin from a goy and bequeath to a goy. So for that, we need a different pasuk, says Rava. There is, by the way, the Rosh over here on this Gemara points out that based on everything we're saying over here, that we were saying that Esav was Yisrael Mumer and he's able to inherit. So on the face of it, that means that if you have Rachman Latvan in later generations, you have a Yiddish Shnadzich, nevertheless, in principle, he would Yarshin from his father a Yid. However, the Rosh talks about, and other Rishonim, the Gaonim talk about that, even though that's true, technically he would, nevertheless, if at all possible, we try to avoid giving him that Yerusha. We should, if possible, penalize him for going at Shmadingzich, and therefore, if possible, then we should take away that Yerusha from him and not allow him to inherit it. But in principle, Al Pi Torah, he would be able to. Getting back to the dinim of Eved Ivri and Omah Ivriya, the Gemara says, Tanan Abanam, we learned a Braisa, Yesh Be'Ivri She'in Be'Ivriya, the Yesh Be'Ivriya She'in Be'Ivri. You have dinim that apply to an Eved Ivri that do not apply to an Omah Ivriya, and vice versa. Yesh be'ivri shu yotz v'shonim v'yovel of Mrs. Oden. Now, an Eved Ivri goes free after 6 years, or by yovel, or when the master dies, mashen ken be'ivriya, as opposed to an Oma Ivriya doesn't go free in these things. What do you mean? I mean, of course they apply to an Oma Ivriya. So we'll see in the Gemara in a second what the Braisa means by that. How can you say an Oma Ivriya doesn't go free after these things? The fact is, the Pesukim say that they do. The Rashba also brings up the point that you have also the matter of Ritzia, of piercing the ear, applies only to an Eved and a Shifra. So he says the Braisa is listing things by which he'll go free. Just the opposite with Ritzia, he's not going free, he's remaining further enslaved until Yovel. Then the Braisa continues, V'yeshba Ivriya, Shara Ivriya Yotze V'simonim. On the other hand, an Ivriya, an Omah Ivriya, has something which an Eved Ivri doesn't. She goes free when she develops Simonim, the Einanim Kedis Venishnes, and also she can't be sold twice once she was freed, whether after 6 years or whatever, then her father can never sell her again, as we're going to discuss further down on the Amud. Another din is that you can redeem her even against the will of the master. He has to be willing to accept her redemption, Bal Kocha means Bal Kocha, the father. The Gemara is going to explain further on that we're going to force the father to be poi to her, even though he's going to say, I'm poor. The whole reason I sold her in the first place is because I don't have very much money. Nevertheless, we force him to do whatever he can to raise the money to redeem her. Mashen can be ivri, where those dinim do not apply to an evidim. So let's analyze this price. So Omar Yesh be Ivri Masha Yesh be Ivri Shain Bravia or a mini, but I have a contradiction. We said in the Mishnah, Yisera all of Omar Ivriya Shakona Atum Basimonim. We said an Omar Ivriya has all the ways of going free that an Ebed Ivri does, 6 years, Yovel, etc., plus also Simonim. So what are you telling me that there are ways in which an Ebed Ivri can go free and an Omar Ivriya cannot? So the answer is Omar of Sheshes to go into Yoda. So Rav Shesha says what the Braisa, the first Braisa that we quoted, the Braisa that we quoted, what it means she doesn't go free is that if the Odin had been miyayed, her yield is a kind of kiddushin. And we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the details of yield later on, but the gist of it is basically the Torah says, the Odin has the option during the time when she's working for him as an Amma Hebriya, that he can decide, you know what, the money that I paid for her in the first place as an Amma is going to be used as a kess of Kiddushin, and she will become my wife. Or he can decide the same thing, that his son should do that. So therefore, the point is, Rav Sheshes is saying, once Yield was done, she's considered his wife. So now she's not going to go free after 6 years or whatever. If they want to separate, they're going to need a get. So we're saying that 6 years, the marriage doesn't expire after 6 years, the marriage doesn't expire at Yovel, and even when he dies, when his son dies, then she's gonna have the regular rules of a woman whose husband died, and if there were no children, then she's gonna need Yovel. So the Gemara says, you're order pshita. Well, isn't that obvious? Of course, she's his wife. Gita boya, she's going to require a get, obviously. And the answer is, ma'u de tema lo livta lahilch samina. Without the Braita telling us, you would have thought maybe the original halacha does not go away from her. After all, she originally came into this household as an Omer Hevriya. So maybe the status of Omer Hevriya doesn't completely go away. And therefore, maybe we would say, therefore, 6 years or Yovel or whatever would be able to make the marriage be over. Or in fact, the Shita Nelonod Lami says, fine, it might not mean the marriage would automatically expire after 6 years, but maybe it would mean that after 6 years or Yovel, whichever comes first, maybe Beis Din would force the husband to write her again. So Kamash Malan, therefore the Braisa is telling us that no, that she's like any regular wife and there's a get and there's no particular time limit on it. So the Gemara says, Yehochi, am I Yotze b'simonim? Well, in that case, if you're talking about that he did yield, then why is saying she goes out with simonim? Same thing. If he decided while she was a katana that he's going to marry her and he did yield, then she's not leaving afterwards either without a get. So what do you mean yotze b'simonim? And the Braisa says, you're right, chokikomer. What it means is, im lo yoda, if he didn't do yield, so she remained an Omer Ivriya, yotze af b'simonim, then she has an additional thing over an Eved Ivri that she goes free when she develops simonim. So in other words, the Braisa is talking about two different cases. First, it's saying that if there was yield, then she remains his wife permanently, and there's no 6 years of yovel or anything like that. And second of all, that if there was no yield, then she has the advantage over the Eved Ivri that she goes free with simonim, where an Eved Ivri would not do that. Fine. Now, we said in the Braisa, one of the distinctions was Ve'eninim Keres V'nishnis. We said an Omer Hevriya is never sold twice. So what does that mean? The Klal de Eved Ivri Nimka V'dishna. So does that imply that an Eved Ivri could be sold twice? Vahatanya, we learn in a Braisa, Vignei Vosai V'loi V'kfeilai. Now we have like this. One of the cases we talked about at the beginning, where an Eved Ivri is sold, is where he stole money and he can't afford to pay it back. But the fact that the Torah says, the pasuk says, im ein loy, it says shalom yishalom, he has to pay back what he stole. Im ein loy, if he doesn't have what to pay back, the nimka b'gnei vasei, then he's sold as a result of his theft, to pay off his theft. So from the fact that it says, b'gnei vasei, means that we exclude from it various cases where we don't sell them. Now we're going to talk about three different cases. And in fact, usually we can't learn multiple dinim from the same word, but over here the Ritva explains that you have the factors. It says b'gnei vasei, it could have said b'gneva, instead it says b'gnei vasei, and so forth. So therefore you can learn multiple dinim from the same word, as the Gemara will often do, because the word could have not been said at all, it could have been said b'gneva, etc. Anyway, first of all, we learn b'gneva v'lo kfilei. First of all, he only gets sold if he can't afford to pay back the gneva itself, not if it's just that he can't afford to pay back the kefil. So we know a ganav has to pay tashlume kefil. So he stole, let's say, $1,000 worth. So now he'd have to pay back $2,000. If he's able to pay back the $1,000, just not the $2,000, we don't sell him as an eved ivri for that. We say the $1,000 you'll pay now because you can afford that. The other $1,000, you were not going to sell you for it. Instead, you're going to have to eventually raise that money and pay him back. Another din, b'gnevei v'lo b'zmamei. Another thing is not if he was an eid zomim. Usually we aid him zomim, we do kasha zomam v'lo kasha osa. So now suppose that this guy was one of a pair of eidim zomim who testified that somebody stole, and it turns out that that's not so. We don't say therefore that we would make. So now they testified the guy stole $1,000 actually. So the Mishnah in Makkah says actually when it comes to dinim mominus, we split the amount they have to pay between them. So if they testify they stole $1,000 and it was two eidim zomim, then each of them is going to pay $500. Whatever the point is, in other words, that therefore even if he can't afford that $500, we don't sell him as an eved ivri. We'll just have to wait until he earns the money. And the third din is v'gnei vasei. When we say that we sell him for his theft, we learn from that also. Kivin shenimka pamachas shuv iyata rashoy lemoichoy. Once he was sold once, you can't ever sell him again. So you see that an eved ivri can't be sold twice either. So what did the first braisa mean when it said that an eved ivri could be sold again and again? So the answer is Amar Rava like Kasha can be gneva achas can be shtei gnevas. There's a difference whether there was one gneva or whether there was two. Meaning, so Rashi explains that he stole only one time. So now what happens is suppose that he can't pay it back. Now he himself has a value as an eved. Say for example, if you sell him as an eved, you're gonna get $500 for him. So now suppose that the amount he stole was $1,000. So then we're not gonna sell him again and again. We're not gonna sell him again and again. Instead, we're just gonna say he can be sold once and maximum once, and that's that. But where there's two different So Rashi says we're not going to actually sell him in the first place. We're not going to sell him in the first place. Instead, he's just going to have to raise the money in order to pay it. Because to begin with, to sell him like that, under those circumstances, you wouldn't be selling him b'gnei vasei. The pasuk is saying you sell him b'gnei vasei, implying that you're selling him for the entire gneva, and here you're not, because he's not even worth the value of the whole gneva. So Rava is saying, can be shtei gnevas, as opposed to, though, if he stole twice, and then altogether, if he owes whether to one person or two different people, whatever, he owes, let's say, $1,000 altogether, because one time he stole $500 and another time he stole $500. Fine, then we could sell him for the $500. That takes care of the first one. Then eventually Yovel or 6 years or whatever he goes free, and then we sell him again for the other $500. So that would be how to reconcile the two. That's how Rashi learns.
Tosfos discusses that and says and discusses some ins and outs of that and maybe not necessarily. And there are also other Rishonim discuss some ins and outs of it, of not necessarily in the case where he's worth less than the Gneva, would we sell him and so forth. Anyway, Omalei Abaya says to Rabba, Bignei Vosei Tuva Mashma, just the opposite. Doesn't the word Bignei Vosei imply even many Gnevis? After all, many times the Torah uses a singular instead of a plural. Rashi brings an example, for example, from the last words of Yonah, Behema Rabba, even though it's Behemois Rabbois, but it's a common thing for the Pasuk to use a singular instead of a plural. So Ella, rather, we're talking about one person versus two people. So meaning, in other words, so you can have, he stole from one person, so even, and he may have stolen from him multiple times, then we would say that we wouldn't sell him again and again. We would sell them only the one time, and that would be that. Whatever money we raise from that, then good, that goes towards it. But anything else, we don't sell them again and again. As opposed to when he stole from different people, or Rashi adds also, if he stole from one person and was sold, and then after he went free, after the 6 years of Yovel, what have you, he stole from him again, and therefore, so in other words, it's not really a matter of different people, it's a matter of different times being taken to Beis Din. So if he's being taken multiple times to Beis Din, then yes, you could sell him multiple times, but if it's all one time in Beis Din, because it was all one person that he stole from, then we're not going to sell him again and again, because then, after all, the pasuk is saying Bignei Vosei, implying, and we said that implies that you don't sell him multiple times. Tosfos has some problems with Rashi's explanation, and Tosfos says the other way around. Rava's explanation of Gneva Achas and Shtei Gnevas would be the other way around. Rashi had said that Gneva Achas, you wouldn't sell him again and again, but if it was Shtei Gnevas, then you would. And here Abaya is saying instead it's not Gneva Achas versus Shtei Gnevas, but rather one person versus two people. Tosfos says the other way around, actually. If it was Gneva Achas, you'll sell them as many times as necessary to pay off the whole thing. But Shtei Gnevas, you're only going to sell them the one time. And then when Abaya asks on Rava on that, then we're saying the other way around. When he stole again and again from the same person, then we'll sell him as many times as necessary as to pay it all off. But if it's two different people, then Einan Nimka V'Nishna, we wouldn't sell him. We wouldn't sell him again and again. So two different ways. So in short, two different ways of explaining what the distinction is when we're going to sell him twice, and when we wouldn't. He brings similar to, if he stole again and again, then he could be sold to two. If it was from two different people, he'll be sold many times. If it was one person, then he's not sold a second time. Instead, he just owes it. On the other hand, if he's not worth as much as the Gneva, then he's sold only once, so that would be more similar to the way Tosfos learns. So the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa, more on this topic. Gneva Elef, what if he stole 1,000? V'shova Chamesh Meis, and he's worth only 500. So then Nimka, V'choyza V'nimka, then he gets sold again and again, in other words, until the whole 1,000 is paid off. So he's sold, he works for 6 years, pays off 500, then he's sold again and works the other 500. The other way around, if he stole only 500 and he's worth 1,000 as a sale, ain't it nimker klal, then he doesn't get sold at all, because then he's a, then you can't say the nimka bignevase, when some of what he's sold for is not going to be bignevase at all. Rabbi Yezer says either way, only if his gneva is equal to, or is equal to the amount he's sold for, only then is he sold. And if not, he's not sold. So Amar Rava, Bahaza Kanu, Rabbi Yezer, but Rabbanim. In this, Rabbi Yezer seems to have the better argument against the Chachamim. Because after all, you could say, the Maishin of Gnevei Chamesh Meis V'Shava Elef, why would you say that when he stole 500 and he's worth 1,000, the Chachamim agree that you don't sell him, that you don't sell him to Ein Nimka, you can't sell him to Nimka Kulay Amar Rachmana V'Lechetz, because the Pasuk is V'Nimka B'Gnevosai, implying that he is completely sold for his Gneva. So not half of him is sold. You could say the same thing when it says Bignevasa implies he has to be sold for the entire Gneva, not for half of it. So Rabbi Eliezer seems to have the better of the argument over here, that he would only be sold only if his value is equal to the Gneva and not more and not less. However, even though Rava is saying he has the better of the argument, the halacha is like a chachamim, as it usually is, and so therefore you have the din that if the, and he was out of the Rambam Paskins it, that if the ganev is worth less than the gneva, then you'll sell him, and eventually he'll pay back, and eventually he'll pay back the rest. You won't sell him again, because we said before, Abaye had said, ba'odim echad, you don't sell him again and again. And in fact, actually, when you have in the Gemara over here, in the Tanakhama, Nimker, v'choizav v'nimker, Agoriz HaGura points out that the Rambam's gear says, v'einet choizav v'nimker. You don't sell him again, because we still have to make it fit with what Abaye had said before. So what you have is like this, therefore. If he's worth less than the Gneva, then we say we sell him the one time, and that's it. He works off that part of the Gneva, and then the rest eventually he's going to have to pay. But if he's worth more than the Gneva, then the Chachamim agree that you don't sell him, that you don't sell him again. And then what happens is, again, then you have the din that we were talking about before. If he stole again, then you have, there's a distinction whether he stole from a second person or from a first person, or again, from the first person, like Abaye said, Kan ba'odam echad, Kan v'shnei b'nei odam. So the Rambam rather is going more like Rashi in that regard, that if he stole again for, actually, really, the Rambam is going really neither like Rashi nor like Tosfos. If he stole from the Rambam is learning that if he stole from the same person again, you don't sell him, period. Even though, as Rashi was saying, it would be a new din Torah, we're saying that he stole again and again from the same person, and we sell him again until he pays off the whole thing. The Rambam is learning the Gemara in a more straightforward way and saying, no, nothing of that. Just with one person, Gzeres HaKosev, that you don't sell him again. But if it was a second person, then Tan B'Shnei B'nei Odom, then we would sell him again and again. So, you know, different ways of understanding the Sugya over here. Okay. Now, we said in the Braisa, another distinction between an Eved Ivri and an Omer Hevriya, U'machtin Oysa Bal Kochay. We redeem the Omer Hevriya against his will. Well, against whose will? Sava Rava Lameh Bal Kochay De Odin. Rava thought it meant Bal Kochay of the master, that he has to be, that we force him to accept to accept whatever is being given for Hupidya. But Omale Abaya, mind you, what do you mean by that? The Kasabnale Shara Adame, you're telling me evidently it means that we could write a shtar for her value, that's a shtar chayv. So in other words, he may not have the money available, but there is a shtar. Now the fact is, in other words, the Ritva points out, if we're talking about giving actual money, and Eved Ivri can do that also. So obviously we have to be talking about where there's no money available and only a shtar is being written. But how can we do that? Amai, why should we do that? What are we doing over here? He had a pearl in his hand, and instead we're forcing him to give it up and take a shard of earthenware? Meaning, what's the logic that we should say? He has a valuable omahevriya, and we're going to tell him in return you have to take a piece of paper that says eventually you're going to be paid back. How can we do that? So Abai says, no, what it means, Baal Kochai, means we force the father to redeem her if he has money, because he can't say, in other words, well, okay, now I've managed to earn some money, but still I have better things to spend it on. No, we tell him you have to spend that first thing to get your daughter out of being an omahevriya, mishum gam mishpacha, because of the derogatory thing about the family. The family will be embarrassed that their relative is an omahevriya. So the Gemara says, yehochi evin ivi nami nechpinu levnei mishpacha, mishum gam mishpacha. Well, shouldn't the same logic apply to an evin ivri as well, that we should force the relatives to buy him back? And in fact, the Ritva explains, we're talking about over here, suppose that some of the relatives are saying, you know, we're very embarrassed, we should do it, but they don't have the money for it, let's say, and others of them don't want to, so why don't we say that the first group should be able to force the second one? And the answer is Hodr Ozil or Maz bin Nafshe. After all, what good does it do? If they redeem him, then he's just going to go sell himself again. So the Gemara says, so with the Omer Hevriya also, Hochanami Hodr Ozil Umazbuma, new, and with the Omer Hevriya, won't you have the same thing? If we force the father to redeem her, then he's going to buy her, then he's going to sell her again. No problem. Hokatani, and in the Teres Finishness. The Brai said such, she can't be sold again. So therefore, there's no possibility of him doing that. Therefore, we can say, yes, we do force him to do that. But by an Eved Ivri, where the Eved Ivri can always go and sell himself again, we're not going to force his relatives to redeem him because we don't want to just have him use them as a source of free money. So the Gemara says, Umani Rib Shimini. Now, who would that Braisa that we said that she can't be sold again, who would that be like? That would be according to Rib Shimini. The Tanya, as we learn in another Braisa, a man can sell his daughter for Ishus, meaning for Kedushin, and do it again. Meaning, in other words, we know that a father receives the Kesef Kedushin for his daughter when she's a Ketana or a Naira. So if he received money for her Kedushin, which the Gemara is calling it selling, it's not selling per se, but we're using it because we're going to use that expression with an Amahivriya. So if he received Kedushin money for her, and then she was widowed or divorced, still during the Kedushin, once she reaches Nisuyin, then she's out of the Rishos of her father. But here we're talking about where only the Kedushin was done, and she's still a Ketana or a Naira, and now she was widowed or divorced, then he could again get Kesef Kedushin for her. L'shifchus v'shoina, the Braisa continues the same thing as far as being a Shifcha, as far as being an Omahivriya. After she goes free, he'd be able to sell her again. Provided that she doesn't have simonim. Rashi points out from a different Gemara that says once she develops simonim, even though it's true she's in the reshus of the father still, nevertheless, we have a kal v'chomer that says she already went free by simonim, he certainly can't sell her again. Anyway, similarly, you can also have that he sold her to begin with as an omahivriya, and then after she goes free and she's still a ketana, he can still receive kedushin money for her. But not the other way around. If he had received kedushin for her and then she was widowed or divorced, then he can't sell her as an omahivriya. That's the Tanakh. Reb Shimon Omer. Reb Shimon says no. Kishem she'enon moichas bito l'shifchos achar ishus. The same way as that last case, where he can't sell her as a shifcha after ishus, after kedushin. Ha'enon moichas bito l'shifchos achar shifchos. The same way Reb Shimon says he can't sell her as a shifcha after having sold her once as a shifcha. So the braisa that we said before, enon keres finishness, would be according to Reb Shimon. So, and the Gemara says, "Plugged the Hani Tanoi." Now, the machloikas between the Tanakama and Reb Shimon is the same machloikas as earlier Tanoim, where Reb Eliezer and Reb Akiva also argue within the drasha of the pasuk. The Tanya, we learn in a brisa. Now, the pasuk says like this: talks about the Omer Hevriya. It says, "La'am Nochri La'yim Shalomachra Bevigdeva." He does not have the power to sell her to a foreigner, meaning to a different person, to a different person, bevigdeiva. Now, what does bevigdeiva mean? The word bigdei can mean the Russian boiged, which means to be disloyal, or it can mean the Russian beged, meaning clothing. So, the Tanya, we learn a advice, so when it says bevigdeiva, meaning, kivin shapiris talisei aleha, once the Odin, or whoever she was niskadish to, has spread his talis over her, which is a figure of speech, meaning that they did kiddushin. You find the pasuk by Rus, where in the granary by night, when she tells Boaz, for last of kafecha al masecha, you should spread your talis over your maidservant, meaning me. In other words, marry me. So once the talis has been spread over her, shuv en rashoy lemocha, then the father is not allowed to sell her. That's what the pasuk would mean. La'am nochu le'im shalomocha, bevigdeiva, once the beged has been spread over her. Divrei Rav Akiva. That's how Rav Akiva learns the pasuk. Rav Eliezer and bevigdeiva, whereas Rav Eliezer says that no, what it means is, the word bevigdeiva is meloshin boged, meloshin being disloyal. Kivin shebogad ba, once her father was disloyal to her and sold her as an omer hebriya, shuvin rashoy lemochra, then he's not allowed to sell her again. So Rebbe Eliezer would be like the Tanna Kamma of the previous braisa. Rebbe Eliezer rather would be so the Tanna Kamma and the braisa had said that he could sell her the shifchus v'shoina. So that would be according to Reb Shimon had said not. So Rebbe Eliezer would be more like Reb Shimon that he can't sell her l'shifchus achashifchus. But Rabbi Akiva would be, when Rabbi Akiva was saying that once she was niskanish, then he can't, that would be what the Tanna Kamma had said, avaloi l'shifchus acha ishus. So they're essentially having the same machoikas. So in short, that's how it is. The father doesn't have the ability, according to Rabbi Akiva, once piras talisit odin aleha, once there was yield or kedushin or whatever, then if he divorces her, then he can't sell her again. But therefore we parse the pasuk like this: Asher lo yoda, if the master had not done yield with her, now you have like this in the pasuk over there. You actually have a kriyuksiv where you have asher lo yoda. It's written with an aleph, but we read it as though it was with a vav. So asher lo yoda, if he did not do yield with her, and instead she returned to the father, then he would be able to sell her again. But Rabbi Eliezer is saying that Rabbi Eliezer is saying that not. Now, Rashi points out that Rav Shimon actually is sort of taking both positions. He's sort of agreeing with Rav Eliezer and with Rav Akiva. He darshens the word bevigdoi like Rav Eliezer, that it means meloshin boged, meloshin treachery. So he was disloyal and treacherous to her and sold her, then he's not allowed to sell her again. He also, though, agrees with Rav Akiva's drasha that kivin shapiras talisei aleha, so that's why he says that it can't be either. Once there was either ishus or shifchus, then he can't sell her again. In other words, Rabbi Shimon and the Chachamim are not completely repeating the machloikas of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva, but they're following along those lines. The Tanna Kamma holds like Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Shimon is holding like a combination of Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Eliezer. So the Gemara says, "V'mayikumitzigi, what is the underlying machloikas? Rabbi Eliezer sava yesh em l'masodas, Rabbi Akiva sava yesh em l'mikra." Rabbi Eliezer holds that when it comes to darshin and psukim, the main thing you have to follow is the mesodas. You have many times where a word is written a certain way in a pasuk, and we could read it multiple possible ways, but then we have the mesoda. Of how it's written in the Sefer Torah. Now the word bevigdoi, we do pronounce it bevigdoi, where it's clear that it means. That it means meloshin beg. So the word bevigdoi means meloshin beged, because if it meant disloyal, then it would have different nekudas. But it's written in the Torah beis gimel dalet vav. Therefore, Rabbi Eliezer says you darshin the way it's written. So we can darshin as though it said bevogdoi, which means that he was disloyal to her. If it meant bevigdoi, then there would be a yud in there. There would be a yud after the second beis, and then it would be clear that it's a chomer. Then it would be clear that it's a chivit. But without that yud, then without that yud, then it means, then we can read it as though it was with a comet, and therefore, so he says, so therefore we darshan the pasuk as though it said bevogdai, meaning that he was disloyal. So once he was disloyal to her by selling her, then he can't, then he can't sell her again. But Rav Akiva sava yesh ein l'mikra. Rav Akiva says you primarily go according to how the pasuk is read. The fact is, we do read it bevigdai, which can be understood as maloshin beged, because the possessive of beged is bigdai, his garment. So therefore, we can understand it that way, and therefore, that's what it means, that once he spread his garment over her, once he did kedushin with her, then the father can't sell her as a shifcha after that, but he could sell her as a shifcha the second time after selling her as a shifcha the first time. So Rav Akiva learns that way. Rav Shimon, Sover, Yesh Em Mikra, Ula Masoras. Rav Shimon is going to hold, you have to follow both of them. You have to look at the Mikra, and you have to look at the Masoras, and therefore, now Rashi points out, there were other Gemaras where Rav Shimon holds only Yesh Em Mikra, that's where they contradict each other. But here, they don't necessarily contradict each other. Each one is telling us a different din. One, if there was Kedushin, and the other, if there was a sale as an Omayriya. Therefore, Rav Shimon says, you can darshan both of them, and the result is, if there was either one, then you can't sell it as a shifcha after that. Tosfos discusses in some further detail about the possibilities over here, about the Vigdoy and the Vogdoy, and how the Pasuk could have written it. Usually, in fact, in Psukim, usually in the Torah, you wouldn't have a Yud over there. You wouldn't have a Yud over there in the first place. So what does Rashi mean to say that you would have expected it to have a Yud, and if not, then we could read it another way? So Tosfos rather explains, it's not a matter of how the word is spelled, it's rather more way of how the other words around it. If it meant bevigdai, that he was disloyal, then you would expect it to see, then you would expect it, or the other way around. If it was bevigdai, as in the clothing, then it should say bevigdai olah rather than bevigdai va. So therefore, Rav Akiva can say that it means that therefore, Rav Eliezer would say that you go more Moloshin Begidda, Moloshin being disloyal, whereas Rav Akiva disagrees with that. And then Tosfos mentions another possible Girsa, maybe we have to flip around Rav Eliezer and Rav Akiva's opinions. So you have the two different opinions, whether you can sell the Shifchos, Acha Shifchos, or not. Okay, now let's start talking about yield. We said that the master has the option of being miyayed, of saying that this Omer Hebriya should become his wife, that the money that was used for Kedushin, that the money that was used for selling her, rather, is going to be used as the money of Kedushin. So, Boy Rabba Barabua, Yud Nisun Oysa or Erosin Oysa. When he does Yud, does that accomplish full Nisun, and therefore we don't need Chuppah or anything else, or does it accomplish only Erosin, and say that that still chuppah, that nisuin and chuppah are still needed. Nafkamina, and the nafkamina would be as usual between eros and the nisuin. Leyosha, would he yaushin her? If he did yield and then she died, does he yaushin her? If there's nisuin, then yes. If there's not nisuin, then no. Vilitamila, if the master is a koyin, can he be metame for her if she dies? Olahofrin the dereha, if she makes a nether, can he be made for that nether or not? So what would be the din? Toshma, so let's prove from this machloikas Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva that we just had. Bevigdeva, where we said that Rabbi Akiva understood the word bevigdeva to mean kivin shapiras talisa ala, once he spread his talis over her and did yield, shuv ein rashoi lamoicha, then her father wouldn't be able to sell her again as a shifcha after that. Even if the Odin then died or divorced her, implying Zabuni who delay Mizadinla, implying he can't sell her anymore, Rav Akiva is saying, but her Yehudi Miyadla, but he would be able to be Miyad, meaning Makadish her to somebody else. We're not really using Yud specifically. Yud is the specific thing for an Omer Hevriya to her Odin. What we mean is we're using Yud in the more broader sense of Kiddushin. So it sounds like he would be able to be Makadish her again. The iam nisuin oisa. If you said that the yield with the odin creates nisuin, well, we know kivin de nisus shuvain la via rishuspa. Once she has nisuin, her father has no more rishus over her. So therefore, of course, he can't accept kedushin on her behalf. So obviously, doesn't that mean that you would accomplish his only kedushin? And the answer is Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchok. So Elalav Shmamina Erusin. I said, wouldn't that show therefore that you would accomplish his only Erusin, and therefore we have the usual rule: if she's still a Ketana or a Naira, and only Erusin was done, then we just said at the bottom of Amar Aleph that her father would be able to be Mekadosh her again after that. However, Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchok, not necessarily Hocha B'Kedushin De'Alma Kari. No, because this Braisa is not necessarily talking about Yud specifically. It's talking about Kiddushin in general. The Braisa means Kivin Shemosra Avil Mishin is Chayv B'She'erok Susa V'Einosa. Once the father has given her into for Kiddushin to somebody who is going to be Chayv in She'erok Susa V'Einosa, where the Pasuk goes on to say that the Odin is responsible to that, is responsible for those three things to the Omo Hevriya if he marries her, and the same thing is true as far as every Jewish husband and wife. So then, Shuvein Yochel Moichra, then he can't sell her as a Shivcha Knanis again, but as an Omo Hevriya rather. But not necessarily is the Braisa talking about what happens after Yud. Maybe, of course, after Yud, he can't accept Kiddushin on her behalf, because then maybe Yud has accomplished Nisuin and he has no further rights over her. Okay, the Gemara says, Toshma, let's try to bring a different proof. Ein Moichra L'Kroidim. A Braisa says that the father cannot sell his daughter as an Omo Hevriya to relatives who would be also to marry. On the other hand, they said in the name of Rabbi Eliezer, or Rabbi Lazar, it says on the Rabbi Lazar, Meforshim say that you could also sell her to relatives because the fact that now what it is the Gemara is going to explain later on. It depends what kind of, even according to the Tanna Kamma, depends what kind of relatives we're talking about. You can have where the relative himself is also to marry her, but his son would be able to marry her. In that case, there's not a problem with it. Even the Chachamim would agree that that's fine because yield could be accomplished. For example, the father of this daughter wants to sell her to his own father. So she wouldn't be able to marry his father because that would be her grandfather, but she is allowed. Her father could then do yield with another one of his sons, which would be her uncle. That's fine. A niece can marry her uncle. But anyway, so the Tanna Kamma is saying though, where it's not possible to do yield with either one of them, for example, let's say the father wants to sell her to one of his own sons, should be also to marry the Odin himself, because he's her brother, should be also to marry the Odin's son, because she's his aunt, and an aunt is not allowed to marry a nephew. So then the Tanna Kamma is saying you can't do that, but they said in the name of Rabbi Eliezer or Rabbi Lazar that you could do that, because he holds, just so you can't do yield, doesn't matter, that doesn't prevent the same. The Shovin, but they do both agree, Shemoichra Almana L'Kohen Gadol, that he could sell her, even if she's an Almana, he could sell her to a Kohen Gadol. I, a Kohen Gadol, can't marry an Almana, doesn't matter, Kiddushin or Toifis. Grusha V'Chalutza L'Kohen Hadyet. Similarly, if she's a Grusha or Chalutza, he could sell her to a Kohen Hadyet, even though she'd be also to them, but she is, it's only a Chai V'Lavin, and Kiddushin or Toifis. So the point is, Hi Almana, hey Fidomi. So we have to ask, what's the scenario involving an Almana where you're saying that he could sell her? Elema de Kaddish Nafsha, are you talking about where she was Makadish herself, where she as a Tana, because that's when she sold as an Omer Ria, she accepted Kedushin on her own behalf? Almana Karila, how could you call her an Almana? Kedushin are not Chal Bechlal. She has no ability to do that. Only her father can be Makadish her at that age. The Elod Kadshavia. So obviously you have to be talking about that her father accepted Kedushin on her behalf. So then you would have to ask, me Motzin is Abinlah. Well then, how would he be able to sell her? V'ha'in and Amotha is bitter the Shifchos Achar Ishus. Didn't we say before that, according to Rabbi Akiva anyway, and the Anlocha is like him, that you can't sell the Shifchos Achar Ishus. So once she was in the Skadish, you can never sell her as an Omer Evdia. V'omer of Amram, Omer of Yitzchak, Pacha B'Kedusha Yiyud Askinan. And sort of Amram explained we're talking about specifically not regular kedushin but rather kedusha yud. Or Braisa would be following Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda, who says further on in the Gemara that the original money was not given for kedushin, meaning, in other words, that he has to give Meaning, in other words, that we don't say that the up until now, we've been saying that yield is that the original money that was given, that was paid for her to begin with, becomes the money of Kiddushin. But now we're saying that, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda says, to begin with, when she was sold, that money was not meant for Kiddushin. How is he miyayed her? Because the fact is, there's work that she has to do for him, and instead he's freeing her of that and making her his wife instead with that.
What if there's still left over of Sefer Pruta?
And it doesn't matter when the Sefer Pruta we're talking about. Moris HaRishon is not the Kiddushin Nitnu. The point being, in other words, therefore, that Kiddushin, if we say Moris HaRishon is the Kiddushin Nitnu, then we mean, in other words, the father received that money. So therefore, that's fundamentally the equivalent of Kiddushin. But if we say he's being a Kaddish, as Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda says, as we'll learn tomorrow, as Hashem, that he's being Mekadosh her with the work she still has left. Well, then the father has nothing directly to do with that. So therefore, there was no Kiddushin that involved the father. So now, therefore, what Rabbi Akiva had said before, Kimon Shapiras Talisei Aleha, Shuven Rasher Lemoichra, because that would only be if the father had been Mekadosh her, and here he can't. So, and here he didn't, rather.
We're talking about Megira, right?
Yeah, we're talking about...
Megira, whatever left over. Yeah. Megira. The money that's left over.
Yeah, okay. We're not talking about the balance. We're talking about Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda saying it doesn't matter whether there's a balance. It matters whether there's still avos. The fact that he's still his shifa is good enough for you. Anyway, the point is, so now we've established how we have a scenario where she could be an almana and still conceivably be sold as an Oma Hevriya. So now, the Iyamit Nisuin Oisa, after all, If you say that the yield accomplishes Nisuin, so what? Once Nisuin has been accomplished, the father never has any reshus over her in the first place. So therefore, so you can't even talk about him selling her as an almana. The whole scenario that we constructed over here, where according to Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, the scenario is she was sold as an Oma Hevriya. Now her Odin is Mekadosh her with yield, not as a result of the money, like the Chachamim say, but rather like Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda says, with her work. And now she becomes an almana. So now you're saying that her father could sell her even to a Kohen Gadol, even though the Kohen Gadol is also to marry her, because Kiddushin would be Toifus, but that would only work, only if the yield that the Odin had done would create Erosin rather than Nisuin.
So we never had relations with
him. So that's... But that's the point. The point is, in other words, that therefore that establishes that it's not considered to be Nisuin, yet it's only considered to be Erusin. And therefore Nisuin would still be necessary afterwards for them to become complete husband and wife. So the Gemara says, "Ve'elamai erusin oisa." So what are you going to tell me then? You're going to argue that yield accomplishes only erusin. So what do you mean, v'shavin shemoichra? What do you mean that both the Tanakama and Rabbi Lozer would agree that he could sell her as a shifa? Why? We said before that once there was issues, he can't sell her as a shifa. So either way, even if it was only erusin, he still wouldn't be able to. Elamai islachomem ashayni erusin didom erusin davia. You could say the answer is that there is a difference between erusin that were accomplished by her, meaning without her father being directly involved. Again, like we're saying, according to the Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, where the erusin, the yield, is accomplished without her father directly being involved. So Afilu Tamer Nisuin Oisa. So you could maybe even say Nisuin would accomplish Nisuin, and you could still say Shiny Nisuin Nidom Nisuin Davia. You could still say there's a difference between Nisuin that were accomplished by her father giving her over for Nisuin, where there she's out of his reshus, and he can never do anything with her again, whether Kiddushin or sales, versus where she herself marries the Odin with her work, as Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda is saying. You could argue that maybe her father hasn't completely forfeited reshus over her. So you could say maybe that way, and therefore you could actually argue that the yield does even accomplish Nisuin, and nevertheless you could still say that the father has a certain degree of ownership of her, to the extent where now he could sell her conceivably as a shifcha again, and therefore we're saying that even if she's an almana, he could sell her to a kohen gadol. So we could say that it's not necessarily a solid proof that the yield accomplishes only kiddushin.
So let's say she sells herself for the money. Nafsha, she sells herself.
Whoa, stop. She never sells herself in the first place.
No, she buys it. She does it.
Whoa. We're talking about yield over here. We're talking about the master does yield. He says, I would like you to be my wife. We talked about, and we're going to talk about further in the Gemara tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, we'll stop over here and we'll finish the discussion tomorrow, but according to the Chachamim, what it is we say, how is that accomplished? Because money was paid for her to begin with, and that money now becomes Kesef Kedushin. Meaning, in other words, in effect, the father has done Kedushin for her as in the usual way, except that it was done in a bit of a roundabout way by selling her as a by selling her as an Omer Hevriya first. But therefore, so we would say that after Ishus, he can't sell her again as a Shifcha. But if we say, like Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, that it's completely voluntarily on her part. There's no Kesef Kedushin involved. The master is buying her with her Abdus. Then we could argue that that's different. Maybe the father still retains rights over her. And we could say that even if Nisuin has been accomplished.
Why would the father retain rights over her if she sells with her own money? That's her herself. She's doing
it herself. Her own. Because the fact is, he didn't receive Kesef Kedushin for her yet. So therefore, still the fact is, she's still a Ketana. And therefore, he still has certain rights over her, including the rights to be Mekadosh her. So now we're saying he has the right to be Mekadosh her, and also he would have the right to sell her, and therefore, even if, so now, if after this yield, her husband, the Odin passed away, before the Odin passed away, and now she's an Amona, then he'd be able to sell her to a Kohen Gadol. So therefore, so there's not necessarily a solid proof that it creates Erusin only rather than Nisuin. And we'll continue that discussion tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, and finish working that out.